And in this is the Buck Stops Here, and there are two big stories to be followed today. First, a terror alert across India after a rather unprecedented sharing of intelligence by Pakistan. Does this signal a major change in policy? And then we move on to what's been a rather bad day for Vijay Mallya. Is this the end of the good times for him? So two major stories, two major debates that we will be having. But let's just start off with that terror alert all across India. Today is, of course, Mahashivratri, and has been marked by that terror alert. But what's particularly noteworthy about this is that it follows the sharing of intelligence by Pakistan. It's based on a tip-off by Pakistan. So does that mean that Pakistan is now changing its policy?
A multi-city alert across India, including tier 2 cities like Lucknow, Chandigarh, Bhopal and Vijayawada.
Security agencies se apna kaam kar rahe hain. Us pe dekhiye ek inputs mila, usko koi behas karne ka mudda nahi hai. Isko main is tarah se bayanbazi dekar ke usko khula baat to nahi kar sakta.
Sources tell NDTV, besides a tip-off from Pakistan, Indian security agencies have also warned that 10 Lashkar or JM terrorists have sneaked into India through Gujarat. Security agencies have launched a nationwide hunt to track them down. But 24 hours into the alert, the 10 terrorists remain untraceable. For the first time ever, Pakistan has tipped off India of a possible terror attack. India remains skeptical. Is Pakistan running with the hare and hunting with the hound? In Gujarat, where the terrorists are believed to sneaked in from tight security,
here in Gujarat, security continues to be intensified. You can see lots of police deployment here in the city, outside religious places and outside some temples. Vehicles being checked thoroughly. Barricades have been put up, and in fact, the city has in fact been turned into fortress.
In adjoining Maharashtra, similar measures.
The Maharashtra government is not taking any chances and has ensured that there is red alert across the city and security is tightened.
While security agencies stroll through India searching for the 10 terrorists, the big worry continues to be the tier 2 cities and the response to a possible terror attack. With Rohit Bahan in Ahmedabad and Ankita in Mumbai, in New Delhi, Sudhiranjan Sen for NDTV.
All right, let's take a look then at what this possibly signifies, not just the terror alert, but what it might mean about India-Pakistan relations. Remember, there was a Pakistani team here as well, checking out security at Dharamshala. For more on all of this, Brahma Chelani is joining us, strategic affairs analyst. We have Casey Singh, also former Secretary, Ministry of External Affairs. Abhishek Manu Singhvi is joining us as well. Joining us from Pakistan, Admiral Javed Iqbal, defense analyst from Pakistan, and Nalin Kohli is going to be with us in just a short while. But Casey Singh, why don't I just kick off with you. The fact that you have the Pakistani National Security Advisor picking up the phone, calling up and saying, we think that terrorists may have entered and you need to be concerned. It's Mahashivratri, there could be a terror attack and we are warning you about it. To your mind, does this signal a major change one way or the other? Is this a fairly unprecedented development? Normally they're sort of pushing them in on the quiet and not telling us about it until after the terror attack, not telling us at all actually, just allowing the terror to happen.
Well, the fact that they've done it publicly can mean one of various things, because if the question was only tipping us off, then these things are normally done quietly, because you're also tipping the militants off. So what kind of a warning is it if you tell the perpetrator, who may already be in India, to be aware that they are functioning at a disadvantage? Is it a group that they are not controlling, so they're killing two birds with one stone, saying it's LET or it's a faction of the LET or elements of the JM or LET, which may be having allegiance to some other group? So they want to discipline that, send a signal to those organizations which may not be playing ball, and also earning brownie points with India. Or finally, is it that there is no such group? So you give such a warning, and this is a typical intelligence bureau warning. If something doesn't happen, you say, look, we warned you, so it didn't happen. And if something happens, you'll say, we forewarned you. But in the process, you're trying to create the atmosphere for resumption of dialogue. It can be any one of these various things. But to assume a straightforward thing that they have done it with great positive intention and they want to control the groups back home, then the information should be more specific. It should be more specific information.
Well, I mean, you know, yes, and your point is well taken, although if they are not in their control, then they wouldn't have more specific information than this. But you're clearly sounding skeptical. Brahma Chelani, you tweeted a little earlier in the day, if I remember, something about Alice trapped in Wonderland. First, Modi's Lahore visit yielded a string of terror attacks, you said, and now India, relying on Pakistan intel, mounts a terror alert. What exactly are you getting at? You think this is not a genuine alert? Are you skeptical about it, like KC Singh seems to be?
There are two facets to it. First, groups like JEM and LAT are nothing but front organizations of the ISI. No cross-border infiltration happens without support from the Pakistan military. Now, there's a Pakistani motive at play and an Indian motive at play. The Pakistani motive is twofold. One, to advertise Pakistan's quote-unquote cooperation on the terrorism issue. And second, to put India on a wild goose chase. Now, what is India's motivation in leaking out this alleged tip-off?
It's not been officially confirmed. You're right, this is more coming from sources.
That's why I said it's leaked out.
They're getting information. You know,
it's leaked out to the media, but there's a motive, an Indian motive at play. The Indian motive appears to be to create political space at home to facilitate a Modi Sharif meeting in Washington this month end on the sidelines of the Nuclear Security Summit. Creating this space is necessary because of the boomerang effect of Modi's famous hug of Sharif in Lahore on Christmas Day. That hug, like Vajpayee's hug of Nawaz Sharif at Wagah border in 1999, did not bring peace. It brought greater cross-border terrorism. You know, so the Modi hug.
Having said that, the fact to which, in after all these years, of after two decades or three decades, for the first time, the Pakistanis have actually given a tip-off. Does that not sound as a vindication of that strategy, the decision to go out there? I mean, we can be skeptical that is there really a group?
All the attacks that have happened in India of Pakistani origin have been carried out by terrorist proxies of Pakistan. They've not been carried out directly. Now, to tell India through a tip-off that 10 alleged LET and JEM terrorists have infiltrated into India's Gujarat begs the question that these are your guys. You are informing us after they've infiltrated. Maybe they have infiltrated into Kashmir or Punjab or Rajasthan. You're putting India on a wild goose chase. There's a national alert. But what is the more important thing is, why are the Indians leaking out this alleged tip-off? Okay. There is a motive at play there.
All right. Let me go to Admiral Javed Iqbal there. As you can see, many of our experts are sounding slightly skeptical. What are you hearing from there? Is this part of a deliberate new strategy that is being followed by Pakistan? That, look, from now onwards, whenever we're going to get some information, we are really serious, we're going to tell the Indians, we're going to try and prevent attacks from taking place there? Or is there some game at play out here? And various reasons have been put
forward. I share my Indian friend's concern. I totally share with them. I think I would also be skeptical. The fact is that unthinkable is happening. So when unthinkable happens, then the people, you know, have many questions about it.
The unthinkable you're talking about is the fact that the Pakistani National Security Advisors actually called up his Indian counterpart and saying, be careful, they're terrorists.
That if Nasir Janjoa, if General Nasir Janjoa is calling him and taking off, that, you see, he has been also part of that organization for a long time. So, one thing, what I think, we should take it also. Sometimes when we try to be clever and we have to our own interpretations, agree that some of it may be absolutely justified. But I think if we just take it on face value, what does it mean? I think it does not, put any harm to anybody. I think, let's say, that if the establishment in Pakistan and the political people, pundits in Pakistan, the government in Pakistan, if they are on the one page, and if they think that this menace The terror menace is, keeping, yeah, making both India and Pakistan hostage. I think if they have done it,
yeah, I'm just,
they may be checking that what is your response to it, and whether you also...
So you are saying what is going to be India's response? I mean, let's face it, what's more normal for a Pakistani national security advisor or for the Pakistani state, and certainly for the ISI, is actually to give the terrorists arms, ammunition, give them a nice, have fun, good luck to you sort of cards and push them across.
I want to add one thing. Don't forget that LET, Jaish-e-Mohammed and many of Taliban groups are not in control of Pakistan.
That's why the skeptical is there.
It happens everywhere. You fund, support. You support a guy and he overturns you. He becomes your enemy. So it is nothing new. Now, it is a fact that the Pakistan establishment is not controlling many of these guys, many of Taliban. So I think I would take it on face value that if it is a goodwill gesture, how does India respond to it?
I think if I may just intervene and link it with something else that India is doing, welcoming Pakistani investigators in the Pathankot case, that tells you even more.
Pakistani security team just today going to Dharamsala. So that's why I'm trying to figure out if there's something radical that's happening out there.
No, but for India to agree to welcome Pakistani investigators in the Pathankot case is like accepting arsonists as firefighters. By agreeing to accept a team from Pakistan to come to India to probe the Pathankot attack, India has bought the myth that groups like JEM are independent of the Pakistani state. Let's face it, the JIT that Pakistan has set up, the Joint Investigation Team in the Pathankot case, it has been set up not to bring the Pathankot attack masterminds to justice, but to investigate operational deficiencies in the Pathankot attack in order to ensure that the next attack carried out through proxies does not leave similar telltale signs. Now, for India to welcome heartily Pakistani investigators is a major shift both in thinking and in policy. It also shows that India's Pakistan policy today is unhinged. It's directionless.
Okay, let me just get to the politics of that. You're saying it's an unhinged policy right now. Nalin Kohli joining us. Nalin, our signal's not terribly clear, so I don't think we can hear you. We can see you, but we can certainly hear you. Nalin, what does this mean for the Pakistan policy that the government has been following? There was some talk of flip-flop. Was that a ringtone? No, now we can't hear him. Or we can't see him. So while we get him back up, let me try and get Abhishek Singhvi. Abhishek, what does all of this say for the government's Pakistan policy? Because let's face it, if the NSA has shared genuine intelligence with India to say, look, we're trying to help you avert a terror attack, then that's a radical... It seems to be radically different to anything that we've been seeing all this time.
No, I think there are two facets to it. The first part is the Pakistan angle to it. The second is the government policy angle to it. As far as the Pakistan angle to it is concerned, it would really be a dawn of a new era if you were to jump to a conclusion that because there is this so-called forewarning, Pakistan has now suddenly become cooperative and constructive and supportive in a joint fight against terror. I wish to God that was so, but I would require considerably more corroborative, supportive, continuous evidence to come to that conclusion. One swallow doesn't make a summer. If this is so, you will know within the next few weeks. You will know in the way and manner in which these two or three heads of these organizations are allowed to roam free, the way and manner in which their prosecutions are conducted, the way and manner in which people are coercively detained. These are all corroborative, supportive angles which suggest that this is genuine. I don't see anything of the sort.
Okay, at you are again. Okay, so you're saying it's not genuine.
None of the theories you heard till now. No, one second. Just one second. Just give me half a minute, Vikram. Whatever you have seen till now is nothing but a swallow in the summer, and it could be for any of the reasons you have heard in the program prior. Now, the second point is very important. I find the government's policy as zigzag, as confused, as knee-jerk and as ad hoc as possible, as it has
as
been
yours
the last
was.
2 years.
Is that what
now,
you're about to
you
say,
have,
end
you
by
have,
saying?
You, yes.
As zigzag, as confused, as
yes.
flip-flopped, as the your yes. policy used to be once upon a time.
Well, that you are entitled to say as an anchor, that's not what I am saying at least. And I'll tell you why it's zigzag. Our Prime Minister never took a sudden detour without consulting his foreign minister or the foreign policy advisors for a lunch to Lahore, then have hugs in Christmas and now, and then have these attacks.
All right. Abhishek, let me get Nalin
in. I agree entirely that people who are called as investigators,
we've heard
there's
you.
A difference between a person coming for observation teams. As investigators, a very dangerous trend.
Okay, fine. I heard you. Let me get Nalin calling in now, and we can see you and we can hear you both now. I'm happy to say so. Nalin, just wanted to get your sense. Are you seeing whatever is happening right now as a vindication of the Prime Minister's visit to Lahore, or is it too early? This is one warning that has come, and there's still a lot of skepticism, as you can see, as to what this is for. Was it just to send India on a wild goose chase on Shivratri Day?
No, I think I would at least not like to look at it from any of these perspectives, because this is really can't be a political discussion in a sense that A, it's a source-based information. It's come from neither aside any official source. And second is, I was hearing, at least while coming up here, what Mr. Chilani was saying, what Ambassador Casey Singh was saying, that these are the aspects that are bound to be discussed. So with regard to it, in the normal sense, if it is true or not, I can't say. But nevertheless, in the normal sense, you would expect countries to work on terrorism. This shouldn't be something out of the blue.
But for India and Pakistan to work together on terrorism is...
That's what...
I mean, I think Brahma was using the example of an arsonist
yes,
being called in as...
I heard that. And the second part, as I said, that is what you'd normally say. Second is, as was being pointed out, there would be the obvious skepticism given the history that we have and the issues that are there. So I think where I would like to leave it is that with the Indo-Pak issue, it's a complex, it's a situation that merits effort, but always we tend to look at the outcome immediately, and we, I think, have a microscopic vision. So we should stop. At the end of the day, what will matter is only progress in real terms.
Okay,
so for us, it is Pathankot, and the other thing before that would be
progress in real terms. Let me ask you, Casey Singh, in case this is a genuine change of heart in Pakistan, what are the next one or two steps that you think we should be seeing? And if it's not a genuine change of heart, then what?
See, let me just first add a caveat. Even if this information is correct, we don't know if this is the whole information, because the Pakistani NSA may have given many more details which may be useful in apprehending the people. But if it is a general warning, it's really of no help. It's like finding a needle in a haystack. If we couldn't stop the Pathankot intrusion, even after the SP told us they've run away with my car, now you can imagine if the entire border is involved. It's as good as a useless warning. Now, three things are happening, which has already been mentioned on the program. One is the SIT team, which is coming here. I would disagree with Mr. Chalani. There's absolutely nothing wrong. How do they prosecute the people in Pakistan unless they build their own evidence and they collect it? And by coming to a base, we are not going to take them on a tour of the entire base. They'll be shown just the place where the encounter took place. And I don't think security agencies will get compromised by that. They'll make sure about it. And the third is the Dharamsala match. I think it's very sad that a Congress chief minister is just trying to subvert it by any which means, which shouldn't be done, because we've got a commitment. We've got a T20 final. And it should be really India's duty to ensure security for the Pakistani team. It's not a bilateral game. It's a World Cup match, and we must provide the security for that. So I think on all three, we must operate with a degree of forthrightness and caution.
Brahma, you want to respond to that? That he said you don't have a choice but to cooperate in some of these things, and what's the harm in it?
Well, the joint investigation team that Pakistan has announced includes at least one ISI officer. Now, to get that agency's man here, the agency that is sponsoring and fermenting terrorism in India, and expect them to actually investigate the Pathankot attack and bring the culprits, the masterminds to justice, is expecting something that is unattainable. But I think the most important point, Vikram, is that there's a US element to this whole affair. Mr. Modi did not show up in Lahore without any US support. Right now, the diplomatic priority of the Modi government is to arrange the Modi-Sharif meeting in Washington, D.C. And if Mr. Modi's Pakistan policy today lies in tatters, some of the blame must be pinned on President Obama, because he led Mr. Modi up the garden path with specious promises and assurances on Pakistani behavior.
Naran, is this a top is this what this is all about, also setting the stage for a Modi-Sharif meeting?
That's a point of view, and point of views can be from the moderate to the most extreme. And that's, I think, the beauty of democracy, that each one of us is entitled to that. But in the larger perspective, I'd go one by one. First of all, is I think it really needn't be something very big at, you know, multilateral events. Prime ministers, foreign ministers, NSAs, other officials are going to bump into each other. You can't have a situation, at least not in my understanding, that you're going to make it an attempt to stay away. There would be times when relationships are fraught, and it may be part of the movement not to also want to engage even by chance. But I think this is routine. To link it to a policy may be a little extreme. Second is to believe that India is a puppet.
The main point
is
that you have a stable policy.
India is a puppet. I don't know whether you can have a stable policy on Pakistan. I think the relationship is so complex that it's going to be a dynamic policy all the time. Because you have to react to what is important to our national interests.
Admiral Iqbal, let me ask you, you know, one of the things that would set all skepticism to rest is if finally Pakistan actually did move on some of these people who are there. Hafiz Saeed walking around freely, Jaish-e-Mohammed continuing to be allowed to function fairly freely, Jamaat-ud-Dawah functioning freely. While that continues to happen in Pakistan, no amount of terror warnings or alerts, welcome though they may be, will actually end people suspecting whether the eventual intentions are benign or not. So any hope that you can hold out that some eventually actions will be taken there?
Look, you see, I would look it differently. If action is to be taken against Hafiz Saeed, LET, Jaish-e-Mohammed, then the Pakistan's own case has to be built up. The point Casey Singh is making, that because no matter how genuine is your information, as long as it carries the Indian label, it is not palatable here. So you must understand that Sharif is paying the price, and he will pay a greater price of this gesture. And I can assure you, unless the people, it does one thing. It definitely brings people together or nearer. And unless there is people's pressure on India and Pakistan, no amount of, you know, goodwill between establishment or between Prime Minister will make any difference.
Okay. Fair enough. Let me get a last word from you, Abhishek Singhvi. At the end of the time, this is a complicated relationship, but you can't pick your neighbors. So to that extent, is the Congress Party going to be working with the government and saying, look, let's try and evolve how do we handle this situation? Because otherwise, we're going to be back to the circle. You'll keep criticizing them for whatever they do. They'll do the same, or were doing the same when you were in power.
Since you've asked the question, Vikram, let me tell you that our belief, repeatedly articulated, has been that foreign policy is one of those pillars where there is supposed to be the largest consensus, largest bipartisanship. It has been our allegation that, unfortunately, the Prime Minister has divided even foreign policy, an area where since Nehru's time we have shown exemplary consensus, and that degree of division is not even wrought by the Vajpayee regime. Having said that, let me tell you that Indo-Pak relations have been further the maximum during several bouts of Congress rule. So there is no question but that we would want it. I would agree 100% with the basic point made just now by the gentleman from Pakistan, that in the ultimate analysis, people's pressure, people's power, people's perception, and people's general initiatives are the biggest, single biggest thing. As far as the Congress
at the end of the day, the fact of the matter,
so long as we have participation, involvement through the from the government to our side, and no sudden, you know, knee-jerk zigzags, we are fully supportive.
But okay, let me get quick notes from everybody.
We are learning of the initiatives well after they are done, the so-called initiatives.
Okay. People's participation and all that is very well, but I would put it to you, Nalin, also. At the end of the day, while there are terror attacks, any further terror attacks that, you know, may or may not take place, and while the perpetrators of earlier terror attacks are allowed to go scot-free, at the end of the day, there is going to be deep, deep skepticism about anything to do with Pakistan.
And why shouldn't there be? Why shouldn't they not be? I mean, after all, I said it. This is the historical legacy that we have to carry, and congratulations that we have the full credit, Dr. Singhvi's eloquently taking, so about the Pakistan policy. So therefore, in any case, I think that's a reality. We should accept it. Anything, we have to make our attempts. But okay. I don't think we need to raise our hopes so far, nor should we look at it from an extreme point of view that we are puppets in this, that we are being forced to do it under any pressure.
Okay, fine. What would you do, Brahma? At the end of the day, they're going to continue to be our neighbor, whether we like it or not.
Well, first, our policy needs to be tethered to reality. The harsh reality is that we seek the assistance as regards one attack, for example, Pathankot, which was carried out by the JEM. They unleashed their LET to carry out an attack in Pampore. We asked for action against Azhar. They unleashed Hafiz Saeed, who actually has a public rally in Islamabad and threatens India with more Pathankots. So we are facing this problem that we seek assistance for the last attack.
And while we are
focused on the last attack, new attacks happen. So from Pathankot, we have had Mazar-e-Sharif, then Pampore, now Jalalabad. So the question is, okay, where do we focus our attention on? Which attack?
In this case, potentially, there may have been an attack that's been averted. We don't know the full details right now. We don't know what happened. We don't know whether it was actionable intelligence or not, but it's possible.
Anything was a religious place of worship would, I think, create a situation that will be very, very difficult to understand.
And by the way, that might well be what would have happened.
So we have to pray that we do not have a situation. Our forces are constantly working. Last thought on that point to you.
If this attack had, in fact, what the Pakistani NSA seems to have warned about, would have been a particularly horrific attack if God forbid it had actually gone through, an attack on Mahashivratri, possibly on a religious shrine or religious place, it would have been a terrible attack. Not that any terror attack isn't a terrible attack, but this would have been particularly horrific, as Nadan was saying.
Are you asking me?
Yeah, I'm just asking you. Final word from you on.
I think, Vikram, the taste of the pie shall be in the eating. If indeed Pakistan has given us genuine information, which obviously will be more detailed than we have seen in the public, and we can apprehend these people and they turn out to be from the Lashkar-e-Taiba, that would be a defining act, because that would send a signal to the LET leadership that Pakistan government is beginning to play ball with India. But if we can't catch anyone, then it's as good as a kite in the Lahore skies.
The real test of Pakistan's intentions comes not from providing alleged tip-offs, but in cracking down on the terrorist proxies that operate from its soil. If it's really interested in curbing terror, it has to crack down on the terrorist groups that operate openly from Pakistani soil.
All right, gentlemen, we're going to have to leave it there just for the moment. Thank you all so much for joining us. Well, let's hope that this particular terror attack, if it was actually happening, has been foiled. And let's hope that action will be taken against the terrorists who continue to operate from Pakistani soil. We're going to have to end this particular debate, take a very quick break. And then when we come back, the man who's been called the king of good times now seems to be in trouble. Today was a bad day. ED cases against him. That money that he was getting as a severance is now, at least for the payout, has been put on hold for the moment. And lots of questions about what is happening with those loans that his companies have defaulted on. We'll turn our attention to that particular subject when we come back after this break. Welcome back. Let's now turn to the Mallya issue. Today was a bad day for Vijay Mallya because, first of all, the Enforcement Directorate starting to proceed against him. And then the DRT is essentially saying that money he was supposed to have got for a non-compete or severance, or call it what you will, cannot be paid out to him just yet, because the banks are trying to really go after him for default. Now, Mallya's own stance, of course, has been that, why are you only targeting me? What about all the other defaulters whom no one is talking about, not even the media?
A double blow for Vijay Mallya. The Debt Recovery Tribunal stopped him from getting a $75 million payout from global liquor giant Diageo, which bought out his business. This came on a plea from the government-run State Bank of India, India's largest bank, to which Mallya owes 1,200 crores, a loan taken for his now failed airline.
The application filed by the bank has been allowed. Temporarily, we have been restrained not to receive the money.
The second blow came from the Enforcement Directorate, which registered a case against Mallya. It is investigating whether he transferred abroad 900 crore rupees he had borrowed from IDBI for his loss-making Kingfisher Airline. Sources have told NDTV that the money had been loaned to Kingfisher Airlines to pay salaries of employees, which was allegedly not done. But 300 crores of the 950 crore loan went to the United Kingdom. The usually flamboyant tycoon has kept a low profile, especially since banks declared him a willful defaulter last year. But Mallya's troubles are rising. SBI wants him arrested. It wants his passport seized and information on all his assets in India and abroad. This upmarket property is considered part of Mallya's wealth. But in a statement late on Sunday night, Mallya said, the $75 million is a personal matter, not related to his failed airline business, and that he is negotiating a one-time settlement of his roughly 7,000 crore debt. The decision made here at the Debt Recovery Tribunal that Vijay Mallya cannot access that amount, temporarily at least, it was settled on him by Diageo. This, the Debt Recovery Tribunal in Bengaluru, a far cry from the glitzy corporate offices, the high-flying flamboyant lifestyle that Vijay Mallya has been used to. But it's here that that decision was taken, that he cannot access that money, at least for now. With Shweta Rajpal Kohli and Tanima Biswas, Maya Sharma for NDTV.
So what does the immediate future hold for Vijay Mallya, and what does this entire case and issue mean for other defaulters? Let's face it, we have a real problem with stress loans and defaulters here in the country. So what can be done about it? So joining us, PN Vijay, spokesperson of the BJP, Surjit Bhalla is with us, well-known economist. NK Venu is with us as well, senior journalist. And in just a couple of minutes, you're going to be joined by Captain Gopinath, the founder of Air Deccan, which then became Kingfisher Airlines, which a lot of this has to do around. Right, let me just start off by putting it directly to you people. Look, there's a legal issue, there's a corporate governance issue, and then there's a moral and an ethical issue. And I think Vijay Mallya in particularly is in a lot of trouble. Is in the final point that, look, he's living it up, having parties, living life, king size in a sense, and yet not paying salaries, not paying back loans, and so on and so forth. So you can understand why he clearly gets it in the neck. But on the legal side and the corporate government side, what is it that you would make of the orders that have come out today?
See, Vikram, Vijay Mallya's case is very, it's different from the others, because the State Bank of India, the lead banker, lender, had declared him, his company, willful defaulter some time ago. They went through a certain process. There are two committees. There's one committee which goes into it, and then a higher committee. They studied the entire case, and they've declared him willful defaulter, which means that he's in a position to
willful
pay.
Willful defaulter means you can pay, but you're choosing not to do it.
Also, number two, that you've taken the money and you have
rooted into something else.
Yeah, you've diverted the money for working capital for some other company. So some of these things in Vijay Mallya's case appears to have been proven, as they say. And there's an ED case against him because he got money from IDBI to pay salaries, etc.
Right.
But part of the money has gone out to UK. Now, if it is proven in his case, then he's in trouble. And what the authorities are doing is absolutely right. But then at the same time, he's also right in arguing that there are several other big groups.
I want to come to that question of several other big groups and why no one is paying.
10 big groups which owe 7 lakh crores to banks.
Okay. That's a valid point. Surjit Bhalla, the specifics in this case, of course, one of the questions that we're going to have to deal with is this entire question of what is personal and what is corporate. Because, frankly, and this is nothing new, we've seen it now for 60 years that there are a large number of industrialists and others who will perhaps allow their companies to be run to the ground, but will personally make a lot of money, will personally lead a very good lifestyle. And that, I guess, is something that also needs to be questioned and should be questioned. Surjit?
Look, make no mistake about it. This is the beginning of the end of crony socialism in India. As you rightly said, many groups, many people, willful defaulters have gotten away with everything over the last 65 years. And what this is a signal is that, listen, this is going to end. It's not going to end tomorrow. is not going to end today, but over the next couple of years, if not sooner, we will not have a repeat of such incidents. This is the big message coming out.
Now, so, but if I could just ask you a technical question.
Mr. Malia, absolutely right. There are other defaulters.
Yeah.
But you can't catch one, you should not catch anybody. If you can't catch everyone, you should not catch one. And this message will go off, and I expect that other such defaulters will be brought to justice.
All right, but Sujit, one of the technical points that will come out from this, and that's there in the letter that Malia has written also, that if I don't have a personal liability, is what he seems to be saying, and these are company liabilities, how can you hold an individual responsible for something that a company did? Because the whole point of having the company is that the company takes the liability and not the individual. Now, that is essentially what he seems to be saying. What he's saying, personally, I am not a borrower or a judgment defaulter. How do you answer that?
Yeah. Now, I'm not a lawyer, and this tells you that the bankruptcy code that is liable to be coming up soon in Parliament, we should all be supporting it. Yes, whether your personal assets can be attributed or can be given in lieu of your other assets, I do not know. But I'm sure, more confident actually, that there will be loopholes that can be brought to bear on this case and other cases like it. This is the usual, if you will, refuge of all such defaulters in the past. And I don't know the law, but I wouldn't be surprised if there are many lawyers working on this and trying to find out whether he's actually liable on his personal assets when he owes so much money to commercial banks.
Right. P.N. Vijay, if you look at part again of what Malia seems to be saying, he's saying it's a media campaign against me, it's a hysterical media campaign against me, and people who support him sort of seem to be saying, look, he's really paying the price because of his lifestyle. He was very flamboyant, ridiculously so perhaps. He was very open about his money, about his Formula One and his cricket teams and his horses and fancy cars, and that's why he's getting it in the neck and not others who may deserve it more, but they're just being a bit more careful and a bit more clever about it than he has.
That's a lot of rubbish, Vikram. It's become a favorite thing for people to bash the media. The media in India is entitled to do what it wants, and you have your own communication agencies to go against it. So I think it's all absolutely irrelevant. And some extent how he lived about his Kingfisher calendars and all is not germane to the issue. I'm just delighted that after quite some time, the government banks led by SBI, with the strong support of the government and the RBI, are going after these willful defaulters. They have looted the country. And whether they have siphoned off money or no, it's for the enforcement directorate to decide. But all of them, and it's not as if Vijay Mallya is one of the smaller cases. To my mind, it's one of the top 10 defaulters. So it's a large case. The cases are being put on Deccan Chronicle. Strangely enough, most of the IPL owners, they seem to have cases against them or they're behind bars.
Right.
The first set of
so
owners.
So, P.N. Vijay, I just wanted to ask you, from the government's point of view, and you, of course, have been advising the BJP on economic policy for a while. Is there going to be steps to go against all defaulters? Because there are a large number of them, and the amount... If you look at the problem of the Indian economy right now, what are we saying? The banks are stressed. Why are the banks stressed? Because they've got bad loans. Why do they have bad loans? Because some corporates cannot pay, and some corporates are deliberately not paying or willfully defaulting.
Vikram, let's look at it this way.
Is this going to be a priority is what I'm going to ask you.
Absolutely. I mean, the government has this as number one priority, number one priority, because the malaise in the public sector banks is so bad that it can ruin the entire economy. It can take away all the benefits of what the Modi government is trying to do.
Okay.
Let me tell you one thing. I'll ask you a question. Why is it that the private sector banks have been growing so well in the last 20 years? They have not had any defaults. And how come the public sector banks are only having the defaults?
But how are the private sector banks have also had defaults, but of course not quite to the scale that they have.
To the same extent.
Right.
So it means that our government, apart from pushing the banks to go after these defaulters, would also find out why is it that the public sector banks have been so lax in lending the money in the first place.
Okay. Can I get Captain Gopinath in?
What is it?
Can I get Captain Gopinath in on that note? So Captain Gopinath, the airline that you once founded, then became Kingfisher, and you know that's really what sparked it all. What to your mind had actually happened in those years? So was it just bad luck for Vijay Mallya and he tried to do his best? Or do you think there was a lot of misgovernance that happened? And the related question, what a lot of other people have been questioning, is the fact that if he's still got personal wealth and the salaries and all are not being paid to Kingfisher employees, that's what the open letter was all about. Do those Kingfisher employees have a point?
Yeah, I just want to touch on a couple of things. One is, of course, you know, they could be wrong business decisions. They could be arrogance. They could be hubris because of his wealth in other companies, where he made mistakes and he thought he'll get away. And as someone said, there could have been misdemeanors and fraud. Then there should be a separate investigation for that. And there's no doubt that he's also a victim of his insensitivity and his flamboyance, because the more flamboyant he is when you're not paid salaries or when you're not paid the banks, it draws more attention. So I think he's not been very, very intelligent about that.
Yeah, Captain Gopinath, let me just interrupt you. Let me just read out what Raghuram Rajan actually said to NDTV short while back. He sort of said, if you flaunt your yacht, your birthday bashes, even while owing the system a lot of money, it seems to suggest you don't care. I think that is the wrong message to send out. If you are in trouble, you should show that you care by cutting down expenses. That's essentially what he said. Yeah. And that, I guess,
especially when you're not paid salaries of your staff.
I think he's been...
Especially when you don't pay your salaries of your staff.
No. Can I finish? No. I fully agree. I mean, that's been very insensitive, and I think he's paying the price for that. So not the fault of the media. But what I want to also say is that Rajan has been saying that, and I think the finance minister has been saying, so we need urgently a bankruptcy court, because the focus of the bankruptcy court will be to save the company, whereas the focus of the banks was not to save the company, was to go after Mallya for his assets which were mortgaged to them. So the banks did not act in concert. If the banks were wise, they could have acted in concert, removed Mallya at the right time from the management, converted the debt to equity, and then, you know, floated a new bid.
So, Captain Gopinath, let me ask you a question. Let me ask you a direct question, because among all the people who suffered is not just the banks, you're right. It's also the minority shareholders of Kingfisher Airlines, and there are lots of them. They own a large amount of the equity. They're the employees of Kingfisher Airlines, other stakeholders. In your opinion, if this entire matter had been handled slightly differently, could Kingfisher Airlines have been saved? Because right now it's bust. And let's face it, no matter what the banks do, they're probably not going to get back their money.
Absolutely.
The UB Group holdings, whichever their money they put inside, as Vijay Mallya himself said, that's gone. Minority shareholders have lost out. Employees have lost out. Could Kingfisher Airlines have been saved in your opinion?
Yeah. Let me cover that. 100%. Because, let me tell you, I was myself the second largest shareholder. I did not sell my single share to Vijay Mallya. When he invested 1,000 crores, he invested in Air Deccan. I did not sell my share. I could have sold and got out. So I lost all my wealth, whatever I had, because it was all in the shares. Now that apart, since you asked that, all the minority shareholders lost the money. But what I'm saying is, the banks should have moved in, because they kept lending money when he was doing everything that is possibly stupid, and he would have gladly handed over. They should have taken over the management, removed him from the management, and converted the debt to equity, and they could have still gone after his assets. The focus shifted in each bank going after whatever they could get, and they forgot about the airline. The airline could have been saved, because it had 10,000 employees, it had 36% market share, It had the largest network because it was going to 100 cities. Even today, Indian Airlines is going to 40 cities.
And of course, now with oil prices coming down, it may well have been viable. Let me just get quick takes from everyone on this. Sujit,
last point. The government of the day also ensured that the airline went into the ground because Vijay Mallya begged on all his force, allow foreign airline equity to come in. The existing airlines, like Jet Airways, I can name it, they lobbied and ensured that the FDI in foreign airlines was not allowed. They waited for Kingfisher to collapse, and after Kingfisher collapsed, 2 months after that, they allowed the FDI to come in. Okay. If they had allowed the FDI to come in a little earlier, Mallya would have got said, and they could have still gone after his personal assets.
All right, Sujit, so obviously a couple of lessons from all of this, going after willful defaulters, right step to be taken, but also perhaps a slightly more intelligent approach now needs to be taken for all stressed assets. Somebody is willfully defaulting and trying to defy the system, they must be punished. But also, as Captain Gopinath was saying, is there time for some slightly more intelligent thinking and perhaps with the bankruptcy bill and other things, how some of these companies at least can be set back on their feet so that the banks, the loans, the employees, they don't suffer for the misdeeds of a few people?
Absolutely.
Well, you know, the system is being reformed. I mean, mind you, this is a revolution. This is a revolution in how we are doing business and how we allow business to operate. And I think, you know, both Mr. Modi and Raghuram Rajan needs to deserve equal credit for bringing us to this stage. Now, the future is uncertain, etc. But I think this is a landmark. Literally a landmark case for India's future and for its past, in that this thing has happened. We all know cases about this, hundreds of them over the last 68 years. And the point that is being made today is that this is not going to be repeated or after the dust settles.
I won't agree with Surjit.
And with the bankruptcy code coming in, we can sort things out and people can get paid their salaries.
But recognize
that this is a big move.
Okay, fine. Surjit, we heard you. Big move is what he's saying. Landmark day.
I would say this is a small beginning. The big elephant in the room is out there still. The 10-15 big groups, they owe about 8 lakh crores to the banks, and they're not able to pay interest. The loans have been restructured. Raghuram Rajan is doing a good job in finding out the truth, but I would say they're yet to take the bull by the horn. It's too early to give credit to the regime.
So you will wait to see action against the other big defaults.
I would wait to see the revolution happen, which Surjit is saying already has happened.
Okay, PN Vijay, Venu is saying that the revolution, it's a step, but the revolution is still to come.
It's the beginning of a revolution.
Yeah,
beginning of a revolution is what Sujit said. All right, PN Vijay, is it a revolution?
Vikram, it is a revolution because we have gone after the big fish. We have not gone and bullied some small people. We have gone, it can't get bigger than this. And let me tell you this, if the government had not been strong about this, nothing would have happened. DRT has been there for many years. And Kingfisher was declared a defaulter much long time back. It is the fact there is fantastic coordination between Raghuram Rajan and the Modi administration that we are able to use the law like DRT, which is a very powerful law, which has always been there in the books, to get after the Vijay Mallyas of the world.
But hang on, the DRT essentially has put it on hold. And I have to say, there are some questions as to the DRT. 21 more days is supposed to be functioning much, much faster. It's not actually passed a judgment. It just put it on pause for
exactly,
a moment.
Exactly, yeah.
It's not that it's actually...
It has said that he can't use that money because the immediate urgency was that he was trying to use that money and pay off some of his... And Vikram, I want to say one more thing. It is not the job of banks to revive companies. I think we should again get out of that Indira Gandhi mindset that the banks are the great developers. Banks are using public money, your money, my money, and lending money.
But historically, the way it works and abroad, and it's a promoter, do it out
it's case, a promoter who has
management. Yeah. If there is a management or a, you know, which is not completely functioning, then typically what happens is that you have the lenders, you have others, they get together, they find a way of restructuring it, they change the board, they change that. You know, that's what typically tends to happen.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, but in India, unfortunately, if a loan has become a bad loan, you can't go and change the promoter. The banks don't have that power. We have
that
to.
That's what Captain Gopinath is saying should come, right, Captain? That's what you seem to be saying.
It is not easy.
But the banks can hasten the process.
And again, I want to tell you, the bank's first job is to recover the money. It is not to.
Sometimes when the company is bankrupt, it becomes tougher to recover the money. Once the company is bankrupt, how do you recover it? Captain Gopinath, just last quick word from you.
No. Vijay Mallya's biggest mistake was buying India Deccan Airline.
If he had not bought Deccan Airlines, he would have been much better off.
Captain Gopinath probably feels it is the worst thing that he did ever selling it.
No, Vijay. Mr. Vijay, Deccan had only a debt of 150 crores. It was the largest airline at the time.
Gopinath was not financially in a position. He had to invest in his own thing just for the foreign flying rights. The guy bought it, and that was stupid.
Okay. Last quick word from you, Captain Gopinath. We are flat out of time.
All that I'm saying is the focus must shift on going after the promoter. Of course, you go after the promoter, but I'm saying don't lose focus on saving the company. You must save the company not by taking over its management, but moving in and ensuring that a new management takes over by putting it for bids.
All right, I'm going to have to end it right there. The buck stops here. So, well, certainly the buck seems to be stopping somewhere with Mr. Mallya for the moment. Not the best of days for him. Let's see what's going to happen. And also, what's going to happen to all the other big defaulters, I guess. That's the question that all of us are waiting to get the answer to. And let's see what happens on that front in the weeks and months ahead. You've been watching The Buck Stops here. Lots more still to come right here on NDTV 24/7, so stay tuned.